What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
Welcome to Spice Bags. We are three opinionated ladies who talk about international food in Ireland. I'm Dee Laffin. I'm joined by Mae Chin and Blanca Valencia. And today we are doing a cozy chat about one of our favourite topics, fast food, which means something different to each of us. And because we all come from different countries and different backgrounds. And also we feel like fast food is something that internationally there's a bigger story going on in every country and culture. So we're looking forward to diving into that today. But first of all, we just wanted to remind you that we published a cookbook this year.
Yay!
The fifth Blasta book, published by Kristen Jensen, and it is called Soup. And in it, we have curated a collection of soup recipes from friends and podcast.
Soup, by the way, is not a fast food.
Yes, soup is not a fancy. I wonder, is there any culture where it is? We created a collection of recipes from friends and from guests who we've had on the podcast and people we've just met over the years here in Ireland, all from different countries and backgrounds as well. And they gave us their soup, whether it was from their country or interpretation of a famous soup from their country. So you'll find soups from Poland, Korea,
Colombia,
Philippines, Ireland, France. So yeah, it's on sale. You'll find it at blastabooks.com and you can pick it up. It's not expensive. It's a really good one to have to give to people because people love soup. We all have a soup. And also the Blasta book series is really beautiful. So, and it's beautifully illustrated by Nikki Hooper. So you can, if you like that one, there are four others and three others coming this year. So definitely have a look out for it. We were honored recently. We're being self-promotional now, but we've gotten really good feedback about it. I'm really proud of that, to say that. And one of the reviews we got was from John and Sally McKenna. McKenna's guides, who, like, I mean, for us it's just like getting such an amazing review from. We respect them so dearly and everyone does. I'm just going to read a small it might seem strange to say that if you are trying to understand how Ireland has changed in the last 25 years, you will find a great many answers in a book called Soup. On the face of it, Soup is a cookery book written by three prominent Irish food mavens, Dee, Mae and Blanca. Their work is supplemented by a raft of intriguing and creative contributors, and the recipes are dazzling and funky. But in the same way that books of old used to have supplementary titles, like Jonathan Swift's satire Gulliver's Travels is properly called Gulliver's Travels or Travels into Several Remote Nations of the World, so Soup might be fully entitled Soup or Voyages into the Food Systems and Practices of Contemporary Ireland with Recipes, which I love that. Soup is a snapshot of who we are today and what we eat. It is a mezcla, if I pronounce that right,
yeah.
A mezcla where Ahmed Didi's Turkish red lentil soup sits alongside Sasha
Shishnikina.
Thank you. So sorry, Sasha. Sasha's recipe for Ukrainian borscht. The book is both a manifesto and a curriculum because the authors show a continuum between Myrtle Allen's watercress soup and sopa de tortilla from the Dublin food truck El Milagro. We can describe their thesis as exploring both the continuity of change and the origin of influence. They describe an Irish food world that is everything, everywhere, all at once, and they tell this story with subtlety and respect. Soup is a jewel in a bowl. I got goosebumps just reading it.
I love that review.
I just love that review. It's so cool. Thank you so much, John and Sally. We genuinely couldn't have gotten a better review, and from people we respect so dearly. And also for everyone, I know Georgina Campbell gave it a shout out. Irish Times, BBC. We were in the BBC Travel magazine. Thank you so much to Kate Ryan, who interviewed us for that. Katie McGuinness in the Irish Independent. We really, really appreciate all the coverage. We're very proud of the book, as we said, and it is still on sale now. So we'll have more over the coming year. hopefully do some events. We should do some soup events and get our contributors involved. And we'd love you to meet them. They're just absolute, all of them are absolute gems of people. So we want to get those soups out there into the world for people to try. But going back to our topic of today.
Fast food.
May and I think, always have discussions about fast food. More so May
and so. Blanc is a snob of the three of us. And so like Dee and I, this is our passion project.
We definitely were brought up on fast food, I think. Yeah. So I'm sorry to my parents, my family for saying that. But no, what I mean is it has a place in my life and still does. Last night I had takeaway for dinner. I did. I had fast food. So what is a fast food, guys? What are we talking about exactly here?
Yeah, I guess the thing is like, how do we define fast food, right? Because right now in Ireland, I've seen this sort of, you know, everyone's like, oh, street food. It's so trendy. It's so,
something new.
Is street food just a fancy word, though?
And it's like, basically, street food is fast food, right? Like, you know, if you are, I mean, I would say, like, if you're in Taipei, in Taiwan, or if you're in China, you know, like, that's how people eat in Hong Kong. Like, you have tiny, tiny kitchens. A lot of people don't actually cook, and this is how you get your meals. And the wonderful thing about street food in Asia is that it's generally sort of multi-generational, right? Mm-hmm. So you have one person doing it, and they, you know, and have learned the family recipe, and they do like one thing. So you'll go from one truck to the other. So you might get, you know, some noodle soup. You might get a sausage and like sticky rice, and you know, and that's you know, but they do it well, and kind of that's also American fast food, right?
But can I just interrupt you there and say, isn't the difference between street food and fast food, like, isn't there some street food where the duck or the chicken has been, or pork or whatever, has been, you know, smoked or cooked for like 24 hours and then it's served up like on a street food with a hawker or whatever? But like, isn't fast food the definition that it's something that is served up to you fast, or it's cooked fast?
I don't think so, because I think as a Chinese, one of our favorite fast food places is KFC.
Yes.
Right. So KFC is, you know, that's been marinated, right? Like, you got like your whole, like, you know, your spices and everything like that. And, you know, and then it's fried. So it's not made on the spot. And I could argue maybe that McDonald's also is not made on the spot, right? Like, it's.
But I was going to say, the difference to me is that fast food has an association with like big corporations, at least in my mind.
Yeah.
When I think of fast food, I think of Taco Bell,
McDonald's. Or, yeah.
And when I think of street food, I think of El Milagro, you know? But in a way, like, at one point, McDonald's was like El Milagro or Taco Bell. So it's like fast food is the big corporations. And, you know, like people who have really capitalized on a product like KFC.
It's funny, isn't it? I think the interpretation is.
But I'm sure other people might have definitions that are different. I think any topic that we've discussed, we can always disagree. Like, no, it's not fast food.
But let's cover all of it. Let's cover street and fast food. May, you were kind of getting into Taiwan there and Taiwanese, you mentioned it. Do you want to tell us about your experience with fast food there?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, how long do you have?
A whole episode.
Right. And so, you know, in Taiwan, you basically, there's food available 24/7, right? You walk out of your door and there's food there. And I remember my mom actually, when she was a child and going to school, like for breakfast, there would be a soy milk vendor all the time. And then, you know, and so you'd have the soy milk with your fried curlers and then you'd go to school. Right. And that's fast food, I think. Right. Something else with Taiwan. I used to love this thing. It was like cold aubergine. And then you'd have a cold like tofu dish. And for me, that was always like a noon thing. And then at night, late at night, something I love, and Taiwanese people will probably also agree with this, is we call it ji pai, which is the Taiwanese fried chicken.
Okay. I love Taiwanese fried chicken.
It's so good. And, you know, and then the other thing that I love is the Chinese sausage, which would be stuffed inside a glutinous rice. And so it's like fragrant with, you know, star anise, like from the sausage. And then you sprinkle it with ground peanuts and some coriander. Oh, so good. And then I can't, like, even like the fruit juice stalls and the noodle stalls, like, you, yeah.
It's really interesting that Taiwan has such a vibrant street food culture, and China did too, but the
you
communist
lived in China,
government,
right, so.
Yeah, the communist government were like in like wanted to destroy it because they were like, oh, it's not hygienic, it's not this. So when I lived in Dalian, I would go out, find a little market, and then 2 weeks later it would be gone. And I'd ask people like, what happened? And they're like, oh no, the sanitation authorities came and closed it down, dangerous. And I was like, what? So it was really sad how, you know, the government wasn't really on board with these street food vendors, because you could see, I mean, you could walk around and you could see people doing yotai, the Chinese churros, which are done totally differently to Spanish ones, because it's like a hard,
it's leavened
dough.
It's with, yeah, it's,
and they
yeah.
have cutters, whereas in Spain it's like you pipe this liquid into oil. But it was just fascinating how when you go to Taiwan and, you know, and you go to China and you think these are essentially, it came from the same root, but in one country they value it and in the other country it's considered dangerous, and we don't want people to have an image of China of street food. And I'm like, what? I didn't understand it. But anyway, like, one of the most exciting places to really see how people cook is China and Taiwan. Yeah,
I think my brother lived in Cambodia and Thailand and Laos for like a long time, and he would tell me stories of the street food there, especially kind of Cambodia, and I suppose a nation that's renowned for eating everything that crawls. But you know that, you know, that's where he kind of tried, you know, deep fried grasshoppers on sticks and stuff. You know, you go down the market and you'd pick them up, or he just said anything. There'd just be hanging different various creatures and animals just on the streets. But he always said it was the best place to go and eat, you know, like in Thailand as well. He always kind of would go down and have like breakfast or something, you know, from the street food vendors. But of course, when he moved there initially, it caused him to be very sick. But that was just
yes,
until...
I was going to say that about the hygiene thing. I mean, I remember as a child eating in China and, you know, yeah, you're going to have some gastrointestinal issues.
Until you build up the bacteria.
Until you build it up, yeah. With Taiwan, you don't have that. Like, I never got any issues in Taiwan.
Well, but it's places like Singapore where street food is so regulated that you wouldn't have that. But
I always say,
if you want to eat like on the street, like, you know, you go to Mexico, whatever, you just need to be a little bit smart. Be like, I'm not going to eat like a raw ceviche in the middle, you know, just. But if you're having fried stuff like churros, you're not going to get sick.
Yeah, when I was in Kathmandu, we didn't really, obviously anything meat related, we just kind of steered away from. But there was loads of fruit vendors as well that would kind of, they would cook up the kind of fry like pineapple or different things like that on the street. There was amazing street food actually in Nepal, like different kind of things that they would have little cookers on the side of just these bikes, and they would cook up
like
different
fried pineapple.
Yeah. Oh. I mean, like, that was just one person doing that, but you could get loads of different things. They had lots of different kind of pastries and other things, like I said, that they would kind of fry up then and there for you as well. It was really nice. But I think Kathmandu is the city of you can get anything on a street, you know?
I think also with being Asian, I think the thing is that we need to eat all the time. Like, we are constantly snacking all the time. Like, we, if you take food away from us, we get very anxious. And I think that might have, you know, informed in a certain way, like, street food culture.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like for, I suppose, to bring it to Ireland initially, fast food for us doesn't come on the street. I mean, I don't think we really necessarily have a culture of, I'm probably going to get loads of messages after this going, no, it was there, it was there years ago. But like, we don't have a culture of fast food being something that was like street food vendors, you know, like when I think about New York hot dog vendors or all those kind of pitches of things, I don't think that was necessarily a thing. I think that fast food for us was definitely the introduction of the Irish chipper in the 1800s. And we'll talk a bit more about that later. But also then McDonald's came in the 70s. And I think the following year, I think we looked it up, and McDonald's was 1977, the first McDonald's on Grafton Street in Dublin. And then 1978, the first ever Supermax opened in Ballinasloe in Galway. So it was quite soon after that that kind of, although they went down the chicken route rather than the burgers, I suppose that was what they were renowned for. But yeah, I think every Irish person knows growing up, whether country or city, that there would be an Italian family with a chipper in their town. And that was fast food to us, I think. Also, I mean, I'm speaking from my generation. So growing up, there was always a Chinese, like I came from a very small town, Tipperary, maybe like 5,000 population. So there was Chinese. There was never really any Indian. That was always for like bigger and I think more east, more up around Dublin, Indian cuisine. That took a while to kind of come down the country to where I'm from. But yeah, you would always find Chinese families that would open up takeaways. I think that, what do you know, May, or when like the kind of first Chinese takeaways opened up in Ireland, or have you any knowledge of?
I think it was very early.
Yeah.
I can't even remember. You're putting me on the spot.
No, that's right. Sorry.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Think it was maybe 1940s,
1950s. Yeah, I was going to say 50s. Like, yeah. Because we've even spoken from when we spoke with Hazel Chu or some of like their families. I know from speaking with Susie Lee as well, their families have generations of Chinese takeaways in Ireland. Yeah. Definitely going back to like the 50s, 60s.
Dee, I actually just wanted to dial back when you said that every small town had an Italian chipper.
Yeah.
So because in case anyone is listening internationally, some people might be a little perplexed by this.
Yeah, so, okay, let's get into the Irish chipper then. The history, and May, you can help me here, is that around 1880, a man named...
Giuseppe Servi
was on his way to, I think, America, and the boat stopped in Cove, and he got off in Cove, and he took a walk around, and he decided to stay.
I think the boat left.
Oh, the boat left. Yeah. Okay. And anyway, he's in Ireland and he started working, doing construction and things like that, and earned a bit of money. And when he had some money, he bought like a street food cart.
Yes. And he was doing fried fish and chestnuts. Originally.
Fried fish and chestnuts.
Fried fish and chestnuts. The chestnuts was not working with the Irish audience.
And I imagine an abundance of potatoes were around. So, yeah, he went into... he started doing fish and chips, basically. And when he had enough money, he bought a permanent spot on Great Brunswick Street, which is now Pier Street, mm-hmm. which is actually where we are today recording. Mm-hmm. So the first place was on Pier Street. Yeah. Him and his wife, Palma, and they would serve up fish and chips.
I guess for me, the thing that I love about Irish fish and chips is that it has its separate narrative, right? Because English fish and chips... was Victorian, you know, it was for the working class. But mm-hmm. like in Ireland, it has, you know, its own story, and it's an immigrant story. And so many of the chippers now, right, they're Italian, or I think Beshoff's is Russian owned.
Yeah. So there's a mix of, I think, Russian and Italian are the main families who have generational like chains of, you have the Borzas, the Fuscos. I know that the Fuscos, a branch of them, were in our town growing up. And also the famous Fuscos on Meath Street and the Liberties.
Roma,
yeah. But I think, I'm not sure what all the family, Macari's. So it became, and people would be like, but that's not Italian food. How did, like, it's almost anti-Italian that the Italian people would form a historical food in another country that's about fried food.
I think the origin of fried fish and chips comes from the Sephardic Jews who left Spain. So I was fascinated when I learned, because there's a lot of academic papers about Irish Italian chippers, but yeah. The origin is Spain, like pescado frito. So
of course you would try and claim it.
Yeah, I'm like,
so fast food does actually exist from Spain, not in Spain, but just from Spain.
It is true that in Spain we go out to eat fried food because you don't want to do it in your house. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that link between the expulsion of the Jews and them going to Italy, because there is a very still vibrant like Sephardic Jewish culture in Italy, and that now it's become like Italian Jewish. But the origin is the pescado frito. So I never realized that living in London or living in Dublin, my goodness, that's like what but we are eat you in the south of Spain.
Are you sure? Because I know that the English, and you were saying this, May, as well, the English chipper history is very different from the Irish chipper history. So I don't know if they're...
Yeah, I don't think that... Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think in England it was a Victorian thing and it was started in England. Maybe there was a Sephardic
influence yeah.
but I do think, you know, it's like an England thing, whereas yeah. in Ireland it's an immigrant dish.
Yeah. Mm. But you have to remember, like, if you think about it, the oil, where was the oil? Like, where was, like, it's... It kind of came from that tradition of the south, especially the south of Spain, that they had a lot of oil and they fried a lot of fish, and the Jews were very good at frying. And they also had a lot of like fast food or street food places selling that in medieval Spain. So I don't know. It's a link. There's a lot of papers. I'm sure there's also like people who are like thinking, oh, but that's not the real link. But there is a link between these communities of Sephardic Jews who were expelled from Spain and went all over Europe, which are very different to the Jews in Eastern Europe, who had a totally different tradition. But anyway, I'm not trying to claim it as Spanish, but everything is Spanish.
But you almost sound Chinese there.
And Irish. Everything is Irish.
We invented it.
The Irish, obviously, chipper then evolved. And I think now even actually quite a lot of Polish families have chippers as well. I think they've taken them on. There's still such a place in Ireland for a chipper. I just don't think there's any village or town, you know, really where... there isn't one, even a small one to a certain degree. Like, even, you know, when you think about every little suburb in Dublin has one, or, you know, when you go down the country, even there's always a chipper, and it's just always the same menus and the same fried, you know, pre-fried, pre-cooked, pre-done food, like fish. The fish is already battered and kind of fried and ready to go so that they can get it out quickly. And I just adore it. Like, for me, when I was growing up, my dad, my mum died when I was little, and my dad had to bring up the five of us. Now, some of my siblings were older and gone away, but basically he was working full time and, you know, had kids that he needed to feed. So sometimes when he would come home late, it was mostly on the weekends, he'd be like, will we get a bag of chips? And maybe we would have that with our chicken or steak or whatever. It was kind of the, we just didn't have time to do the potatoes, so let's get fried potatoes. So I actually... never, and I think because of that, I don't really order anything else in a chipper apart from chips, because I don't have a relationship with getting a chipper and getting like a burger or a, you know, maybe chicken, some pieces of chicken, southern fried chicken. But we actually would just have chips with whatever else we were having at home. But yeah, and it's definitely my 100% top go-to comfort food. If I am just feeling the way you feel, whether it's happy or sad, and only you know that only that one comfort thing is going to make you feel good or comfort you in that way when it comes to food, for me it's a bag of chips from the local chipper,
and with mostly
vinegar. I like my chips swimming in
also like, are you a floury chip girl?
No, I mean, I like them.
I don't like them floury.
I like them really squishy and soggy.
Yes, I like them squishy and soggy too.
I do like a crispy, like a few little crispy bits.
Yep, but I like squishy and soggy.
I like squishy and soggy, and that's why I love vinegar. So I douse them with salt. Okay. And then honestly, yeah, so much vinegar that you're sucking it out of the chip as you're eating it.
It's funny. The first time I went to one of these chipper places, I'm, you know, I come from a
not just chipper places, they're called chippers.
Chippers. I was
posh
like,
it up.
Why don't they have this inside the pub, you know? It was, you know,
the smell,
coming from
the
culture of tapas. I was like, you know, I was in a pub, blah blah blah, and then we had some drinks and I was like, where's the food?
That's the whole pub thing,
shrimp scampi, whatever, like. And then they said, let's go to the chipper. And I was like, yay. But then I was thinking, why wouldn't it be merged? Why wouldn't you have this?
Because you have crisps in the pub.
Yeah, no, it was, to me, I was like, so I realize now that I should have said that when people ask me what is the closest the Irish have to tapas?
It's crisps.
It's the chipper.
It's the chipper, but it's also
going there and you're hanging out outside it and you're like eating it. That's the closest.
Ali Dunworth, I think, was the person who, after a trip with you as well, kind of coined the idea of that, opening the bag of Tato's or Manhattan or King or whatever crisps brand that they have. They're usually one of those three. you know, you open it out flat on the table, a salt and vinegar and a cheese and maybe a packet of peanuts on the table in front of your friends while you're having pints in the pub. I think that's the Irish tapas.
Yeah,
I think, yeah.
But as well. Not everywhere they have, like, you know, a lot of the times you just have, like, yeah, the peanuts.
The peanuts and the crisps. And, like, I feel like traditionally Irish people do not, and D, you can correct me. I think that, like, traditionally, like, you guys don't believe in mixing drink and food.
Agreed.
Which
we do one blows, first and then the other.
Which blows my mind.
And if you get it the wrong way around, you suffer.
Yeah. It's a concept.
Food first, then drinking. And if you drink first and then do food, that can be dire.
I couldn't get my head around it. I found it very difficult. It was like, so, and the round thing is like, every Spanish person has a tale of rounds in Ireland. And they're like, what?
And how you guys don't do them.
No, you don't. It's just, okay.
It's just so, because it's like, if you're six people, then you have to, like, you're basically going, all right, I'm going to have 6 pints.
It's a rite of passage. Yeah, no, you have to do it. So don't, no, I know. The Irish rounds, we all agree.
With just crisps. Another.
And then can I just say, I don't know if this is controversial to ask you this. Sorry to any Spanish people listening if it's controversial. Are tapas, or is tapas, is it our tapas, is tapas? Are tapas fast food?
I think so. I think, you know, I always say, and I think, we discussed this at Meld Flower, just how you can't order a pint when you're having tapas because you're running. You're like grabbing a thing. You're grabbing an
Because you don't stay in one place and have loads of tapas like we do here.
So you go. So the way people do tapas in Ireland is they go to Las Tapas de Lola and they order a bunch of stuff and they have, you can have a pint. You can have a bucket of sangria if you want. But in Spain, you're running from one place to the other. And it's like, it's an endurance sport. It's like a marathon. You have
like
to go,
a pub crawl.
Yeah, you have to go and you have to be really energetic. You can't bring children. You have to be fit because you're like, you know, screaming and pushing people out of the way in the way that in Spain we just push people and we don't say sorry. Yeah. You just push them. You're like, and then you say, can I have some fried shrimp and a little drink? So you have it and you go somewhere else. And the beer is like literally two fingers. Una caña. Like if you ordered a pint, they'd be like, hold on, because then you would have to bring it to the next place. Yeah.
Hilarious.
So it is, I think it is.
I'm dying to do, I've never actually done the whole San Sebastian. Yeah. I must definitely just put it, it's on my list.
Yeah. Those things. San Sebastian would be the more expensive one, but because in a lot of places tapas are free with your drink, then it is very competitive.
And it's obviously like, there's like, there are McDonald's and places like that in Spain, but like, I mean, are there any other type of Spanish fast food places?
Yeah, there's a place that I adore and it's every teenager's fantasy. It's called Cien Montaditos and they're going international, might come to Ireland. You know, it's a place where they have the little
bread.
Even
know what it is, but we're like,
it's
ooh.
Like it's like little montadito is like a bread with maybe a little bit of like a veal like cutlet or some like tomatoes with tuna, you know. So they have all these permutations when you go of montaditos, yeah, and you order it.
Oh, so, that sounds so good.
And you have like, you have deals like one Coke and three montaditos for whatever, this amount. So that's Spanish fancy, I would say fancy Spanish kids fantasy. But a lot of, you know, teenagers I know also love McDonald's or they love whatever, God forbid, Taco Bell.
I'm going to interrupt our conversation for just a sec and do a little cross promotion of another podcast on the Headstuff Podcast Network. It's called Agony Rants and we're big fans of this one. It's Eurovision winner Niamh Kavanagh and our friend and comedian, reclaiming him, that's his new title.
We're just going to
claim him.
Friend
and comedian, Garrod Farrelly. Where they get down to the bottom of problems from their listeners that they've sent them in. If they don't solve all your life's problems, you'll at least laugh away your worries. I've listened to this so much. It's so funny. Big fan of Garrod, though. He's absolutely hilarious. And him and Niamh together, the banter that they have, it's so much fun.
Hi, I'm Garrod Farrelly.
And I'm Niamh Kavanagh.
And we have been friends for a very long time.
And we regularly solve each other's problems. And now we'd like to solve yours in our podcast, Agony Rants.
It's a weekly show where we offer you unwavering support.
It's true. And it's the place to go if you need a place to vent or to get thoughtful advice.
It's a serious lawsuit waiting to happen.
Now, Garrod, there isn't a problem that can't be helped by having a comedian and a Eurovision winner dissected before your very ears. Agony Rants is 40 minutes with two friends who just want to listen to you.
Niamh wants to listen. I dip in and out.
Agony Rants has a new episode every Monday and you'll find us wherever you do your listening.
That is Agony Rants. And as I said, it's on the Headstuff Podcast Network. You can find it on the website along with ours and all the other podcasts in the network. There is a membership that you can join. It's €5 a month. And as a Headstuff Podcast Network, you get access to all of the episodes from all of the different podcasts, plus any bonus material that we might record, or any merchandise or anything else like that. There's lots of little extras that you often get. So we just ask for your support. We'd love you to support us and support all the podcasts in the community, because we're worth it, basically. So that's headstuffpodcast.com. So we're going to go back now to our little chat. And I feel like when we started to talk about Irish fast food, I wanted to, I suppose speak about it in general. And for me, I feel that Ireland has a really strong relationship with fast food, in terms of definitely from my experience or my learnings and even writing and speaking to people about it at festivals and conversations when it comes up. Like, we tend to, you know, it's definitely, we lean on it for comfort. We make a lot of things into kind of fast food. Like, okay, we have the Irish chipper and we all definitely go there for certain things. But even like, you know, when the kebab came from Turkey, like, we turned that into a definite fast food here. I know it is a fast
Irish
food in Turkey as well.
Irish kebabs are delicious. Like, they are so good. I mean, you can just, and, you know, and the problem I think here is that a lot of people eat them when they're not sober, but like, you have to appreciate it. Just like, it's gorgeous meat. It's
gorgeous
bread.
So good.
And like, you've got like the vegetables, and it's one of the healthiest things that you can get.
When I was in Istanbul, the kebabs were just the best things I've ever eaten. I think that that's definitely a nation in Turkey that they have a lot of foods that would be considered fast food. I really loved the food over there. And then also we have things that we kind of like appropriate, or we make fast food up. So we've got like the jambon, which is, I think, an Irish thing that's just been created. If anyone doesn't know listening, it's like a pastry parcel with bacon and cheese, or ham and cheese in the middle. It's greasy and disgusting. It's beautiful. Sausage rolls from a petrol station, hash browns from a petrol station.
Breakfast rolls,
chicken fillet rolls. We also have taco fries, a completely legitimately ripped off. I don't know where, what country it's even.
Actually just Irish.
Oh, no, it is Irish. Yeah. You can't get them anywhere else in the world. Obviously some sort of Mexican flavor in there at some point, but I didn't. It's very, very far from anything coming out of Mexico. The spice bag, how could we not mention that? I mean, that's the fast food that was also created here. I think we create fast food here as well.
Yeah,
the
three
in
one.
The three in one.
Yes.
Chicken balls. I did a demo with Eva Powell at the weekend at Meow Flower Festival as well. And she did her sweet and sour chicken. And she talked about how, you know, the Dublin versus Hong Kong style sweet and sour chicken. And hers was beautiful. And then she had the three in one, which is like chicken balls with rice and chipper chips and then covered in the sweet and sour sauce.
So a story. There was a lady who was hitting on my husband at a pub, and I came over and, you know, said something, and she looked at me and said to him, "Oh, is she your three in one?"
Oh, sorry,
I didn't. Just wanted to share that.
Yeah. I shouldn't laugh at that. I'm so sorry. That is horrendous.
I know, it's pretty funny though.
It's kind of funny. Yeah. Sorry. I'm only laughing because you said it and it's you.
And but what if did I heard you say, May?
Well, because I
didn't. You're at a loss for words.
No, like, because at the time I didn't know what a three-in-one was.
Oh, so you
so I was just,
like,
and like,
well, she
was, you
asking,
know,
you for a menage a trois.
Exactly. And, you know, and my husband was like, "Well, that's kind of racist." And I was like, "I don't know what's going on here." I was like, because I thought it was menage a trois.
It is racist. It's really bad. I just laughed because you said it and you were laughing at the same time. I'm sorry. I'm appalled by that.
Totally.
Genuinely. But so the three in one, two in one, all those. So Irish people have this culture of creating our own fast food, even from other cultures. And but also, we love a takeaway. I mean, like, weekends here are about Friday nights, everything. I'm not saying, obviously, places like America and everything, takeaways are huge as well. But we do have a very large fast food culture, I think.
I was going to say the most fascinating fast food restaurant I've ever seen was in Peru. It was called Bembos. And it's a place where they've gotten Peruvian food and integrated into the menu. So you have burgers that, instead of meat being made with meat patties, they're made with tamales.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's like a corn dough with meat inside. And it was insanely delicious, or they have versions of traditional dishes like the, you know, the chicken, ají de gallina, whatever, incorporated into a burger. And I thought that to me was one of the best fast food concepts I've ever seen, because it was really fast food and it was burgers and it was kind of like hot doggy, whatever. And they had the Inca Cola, which is that beautiful sparkling drink they have in Peru, which is like a Coke, but it's made with this herb called Hierba Luisa. I forgot the name in English, but it was just so well done. It was like, wow. And like, we don't have anything like that in Spain. Like the closest would be Cien Montaditos, but Cien Montaditos is kind of just... kind of cute and posh, you know?
But I also think that, right, one of the things about the fast food places that we love is that it actually takes a lot of work. And then on top of it, like coming from the US, I remember when fast food was, when there was a feminist aspect to fast food, right? Because it takes the women away from the stove. And I think Gloria Steinem, I might be wrong, was behind some of the advertisements behind that. And you know, it's because fast food itself, it's like, if you try to duplicate that, and you know, when you're talking about the Peruvian place, right, if you try to duplicate that at home, it would take you ages, and it might also be, it might also cost you way more than if you just bought it at the fast food place. Because KFC also did this thing where it's like, you had the woman shopping and, you know, just dialed up, you know, all the costs and the ingredients to make fried chicken, and then they were like, and then our bucket costs 50% less. I mean, it's just, it's, this is fast food, right?
Yeah. It's interesting as well, I think, here in Ireland that, you know, it's fast food, especially I think coming from Tipperary down the country, like, you know, it's not seen, I think there's an association with fast food being a bad thing, maybe because, you know, it's seen as unhealthy because a lot of it's fried and, you know, fried in fat or whatever. But down the country, a lot of fast food is, like, when you sometimes you go out and you sit in and you eat it, you know, it is a night out. There might not be a whole range of restaurants available in your local area. So going out to eat, that's why, you know, a lot of chippers have dining like tables inside. Like, we used to go to the chippers sometimes. We had a Fusco's in Roscrea. It's not there anymore, but they had the kind of, you could go into the chipper takeaway, but then at the side, and I know Leo Burdock's in Rat Mines has this as well at the moment, where there's like some booths that you can sit in, you can actually have your food in there. So, and also like when Supermax came to Roscrea, I think it was in the 90s, and Boyzone came down and opened it, we were all very excited. And you know, it was such a big thing, it was such a huge thing, and like, people still go there on like Sundays or Saturdays with their families, and it's in the same way, I suppose, people do go to McDonald's and stuff. Like, it is a family treat.
It's a treat. I mean,
and definitely, like, you know, there's not other amazing family restaurants maybe to bring your kids in certain areas in the countryside. And as well, I have to give a mention to Barack Obama Plaza, because I'm from that country. It's just out the road from Roscrea, and like, there's so many fast food places within that petrol station. And of course, it's for people stopping on the main road down to Limerick or wherever you're going. But it is also for people in the local area. Well, it's a huge, it's a big employment center as well, because so many people work out there. But also people go out there to have Sunday lunch, or, you know, Saturday lunch with friends or something. Like, it is a spot. So fast food isn't necessarily seen as a bad thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, this is where we go to eat. This is what's so bad about it.
Also, just from my childhood, I think one of the reasons why we loved road trips, I'm talking about Barack Obama Plaza, like, what we loved about road trips is that it's the excuse to be able to eat fast food. Like, that is something that you look forward to.
Do you have a favorite petrol station fast food? Whether here or in the States?
Not really. I mean, I have favorite fast food places in the States.
What's your favorite fast food in the States?
It's gotta be, okay, so it's probably Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh, we used to have Dunkin' Donuts here in Ireland, and we're so random.
Like, super sort of, that's Boston, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, so you got the donuts, you got your hash browns, and you got your breakfast sandwiches. And then there's this other place that I think is just Connecticut, and our former co-host Julia and I talk about this. It's called Duchess. It's so good. They have this veal parmesan sandwich and this aubergine parmesan sandwich, and it's like slightly sweet, squishy bread and really good french fries, and also chili dogs.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, and chili dogs in the chili States. Dogs. Well, like in New York, I mean, getting a chili dog on the corner of somewhere is just like divine. Also, the taco trucks in New York, like
also
fast food, but
Blanca will kill for a corn dog.
I love corn dogs.
There's a guy who does a great corn dog in Ireland. Yankees corn dogs. He's always at Big Grill Festival every year.
Yeah.
But his corn dogs are incredible.
I just
love it's close to the real deal.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite. But I was going to say, when I was in college, my favorite like place when I was in Virginia was White Castle.
Like,
we would always I've only heard about that trips, in movies and stuff.
And I'd be like, I want to go to White Castle. And they would have miniature burgers.
Yeah.
And they were so sliders. Good. I remember just being like, White Castle, White Castle. And I was very kind of, should I say binary? Like our friend Julia Langbein. I really loved going to like, oh guys, let's go to Ethiopian or sushi. I was really kind of avant-garde or whatever. But then I'd be like, I'm eating Velveeta mac and cheese for dinner. And then tomorrow I'm going to White Castle. So my friends always says, you're like so trashy and classy at the same time. We don't get you. But I love White Castle. I would still die. Is it still available?
White Castle's still around, I think. I mean, we had to check it. But, you know, I think it's still around.
When I was growing up, for me, and I think it's, you know, obviously a reason why McDonald's is so popular with families, but you know, the Happy Meal, collecting the toys, getting toys with food. I mean, you used to get it in like Rice Krispies and Kellogg's, you know, certain Kellogg's breakfast cereals when you were a kid. I actually just heard someone mention it on the radio. What's the 45 inch vinyl? Is that 45 centimeter? 45 inch.
Are we dating ourselves?
Yeah, I know. They were like stuck to the packet and you would collect them and stuff. But also McDonald's. Yeah, they would have
McDonald's
a collection
so
of all of the Ronald McDonald and what was the weird villain and chip guy as well. Anyway, all the characters.
Hamburglar.
I used to collect all of those, and it was kind of like when you were with friends, you'd be like, oh, I have some of these, because it meant you went to Dublin, which was also cool because there was no McDonald's down the country. Like when the McDonald's started to make the wave down the country, it was,
I had a birthday. I had a birthday.
Did you have a birthday
once?
McDonald's?
I think I was 8 in El Salvador.
No, totally.
And Ronald McDonald was there.
Wow.
It was amazing. And then somebody gave me a yellow and blue teddy bear that my mom always said, you love that teddy bear. It was horrible. But I do remember the excitement of all my friends. Like McDonald's to me was just, you know,
McDonald's,
the best
I think,
place
yeah,
in the world.
Exactly.
I was 8,
it's paradise,
I think, yeah.
Though. Like when you're a child, and it is, it's so special. Like for whatever reason, like whether you're going up to Dublin and whether you're collecting the toys, or for us, it was always you would do it once a month, or maybe once every 2 months, and it's just special.
I think as well everyone has a fond memory of a McDonald's, probably, or related to something to do with it. But from when they were growing up. I see that there is a petition. I only saw this online yesterday. A petition to bring back the ice cream sundae to McDonald's.
Oh.
Isn't that so funny?
Oh my gosh.
People are so, like, people are very, you know, they have such ownership over like certain nostalgic foods and things. It's so funny.
I was going to say that a lot of my foodie friends, when they travel, they make a point to go to the McDonald's
just to check out and see how it's different.
It's different, right? Like it's like obviously, like in Mumbai, you can't have beef burgers. So what do
and
they?
And the ones in France are so Frenchy.
Yeah,
and
exactly,
fancy.
Right? Like you have like a McChevre.
And you can get beer.
You can get beer. You can have McChevre. Like it's like all of this stuff. It's like represents the country.
Remember that famous quote from Pulp Fiction where Samuel L. Jackson and John Travolta, their characters are having the discussion about what they call the burgers in different countries. It's so funny.
What was it? Like the French one was
the Royal McRoyal
Royale.
Royale. Yeah. Royale with cheese.
Yeah.
Royale with cheese. That's what they call the cheese or the chicken one or whatever. Yeah. It was really, really funny moment in Pulp Fiction. Yeah. They've been immortalized. I mean, they're in, you know, McDonald's and Burger King and wherever they've been immortalized. Taco Bell. First time I went to a Taco Bell, I thought, because I'd heard so much about it in movies. It was amazing.
Lily Ramirez will hate me, but I love Taco Bell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't love it so much anymore, but I used to think it was, oh my goodness, this is fascinating. But I did some research, I think, for another episode, and I found that the founder of Taco Bell copied the idea from a Mexican family that was across the street.
Yes, of
and
course.
Then right. He kind of made that business, and he copied exactly the same recipe. So a researcher who's also, he has a podcast and he has writes a book, wrote about that story of how he stole everything from this family. And apparently that restaurant's still there.
The other thing we haven't talked about in terms of fast food is how healthy fast food is now such a big thing. Like, I mean,
Sprout.
Sprout and Co. in Sprout. Ireland.
Sweetgreen in New York.
Yes,
insanely good.
And Umi falafel.
Like, well, that's my fast food go to.
The Palestinian with
The Palestinian with, like, and I always get the extra aubergine. But yeah,
that's so good. Yeah. In fact, I might do that after this. But also, you have like freshies, you have chops, you have all these different. Yeah. And I think it is that they are fast food, but they're just serving up, a healthier version of, you know, what you think is healthier anyway. I suppose in some cases it might not be as much. Leon in the UK did really, really well based on that as well. It didn't do so well over here. I think it's closed now. But she has a chain of stores in the UK. I used to always love going there when I'd head over there because they're in some of the airports as well.
Mm. Pret-a-manger is
Pret-a-manger
is not maybe healthy, but it's healthy-ish.
Yeah, it's definitely the kind of, I suppose, those sandwich kind of fast food places. I mean, like the O'Brien's in Ireland, you know, they're definitely part of the fast food network of places as well, aren't they? Always, I think you said earlier, Blanca, but you are right. It's something about chains of places that makes you think about fast food, whether it's healthy or not. Yeah, Pret-a-Manger just opened on Dawson Street. Yeah.
I love Pret-a-Manger. I was going to say in Spain, Bocadillos is also like the fast food. And the thing is, in the past, Bocadillos was something that you had like a little shop that did them and they'd be like, potato omelet, like tortilla, it would be ham, it would be chorizo, and I love that. And that would be a lot of fast food. So my favorite one is just like an egg omelet in bread, like, and that would be like fast food. And at home, I remember my cousins would always complain, like, Mom, I don't want to have tortilla again. And when I mean tortilla, I mean just the omelet. But I think in Spain, when people think fast food, it's always an egg omelet stuck in a bread with nothing. So, you know, people who are from other countries come to Spain and they're like, that's so simple, that's so boring, where's the sauce, where's this? And we're like, no, we love our bocadillos just as plain as possible, and it is our fast food. And they have them, if you go on a road trip, you stop in a gas station, they might have like a bar and you say, can I have a bocadillo de chorizo, de tortilla, de whatever, and that's the fast food on the road. But now those have become more chainy, you know, there's more of them.
Mm. Can I ask you guys, when you're growing up or even now, like, what is your attitude towards eating on the street as opposed to sitting down, right? Like, so if you're, you know, like eating a sandwich on the go.
I 100% don't mind.
Okay.
But I think, you know, some things are easier to eat on the go than others. But I feel I usually sit down somewhere to eat it, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Like I might stand outside like Bambino's, you know, this was very New York pizza slice place in Dublin, you know, I'd stand outside and have a pizza slice, but if I buy a sandwich or something, I might head to a park or you know, that kind of way. If I'm not, or if I'm heading on a bus, you know, something like that, I'd eat it there. I wouldn't necessarily walk and eat at the same time. But yeah, I'm happy to eat food on the street.
I don't love it, but I do think when you look at the tapas culture, if you look at a street that has a lot of tapas bars, because to have a tapas culture, you need to have one street that has a lot of tapas bars. You see people are eating on the street, but they're just not moving. They're just standing there with their friends.
But you're not, because like in New York, we walk and eat. And I think that is actually just something that is kind of unique to being American, because I think that's kind of frowned upon. Like, if we got 99-cent slice of pizza and it's got folded over and we're just like booking down Madison Avenue.
Yeah, definitely notice that over there. It's not so much done here. People stop, definitely eat, then go. Like, there is time. I think that's the thing, is there's no time in New York. You have to keep moving. But also I was going to say, around in Dublin, so I took my best friend and I, we meet up every now and again. And the last time we met up, I took her on a little food trail. But I suppose it was just like a little small bites kind of food trail. Just rather than doing one place, because there was so many new places. And when we meet up, it's nice just to kind of go and experience a few. So in or around, I mean, Dublin too, around Drury Street and that kind of general area, there's so many different places. So we started in Glovebox in the Drury Street car park. And it was just before Alta had closed. So we were able to get the oysters from Alta. So we had oysters and we had cocktails. And then we went on to that's not the Drury Street car park. That's the Andrews Lane car park. Sorry. We went on to the Drury Street car park to Amy Austin, and we had wine and bone marrow there. We had some of that. And then we went to, I can't remember the name of it now. They're going to kill me. Oh, no. Juanita's on South William Street. We sat outside and we had tacos and something else there. And we finished earlier, that was where we started, and the Loose Cannon Cheese and Wine, which it's really, really cool place. So we had wine and like cheese and charcuterie there. So we just went around to a few different places like that. And then we ended up in the Drury buildings and we had more wine a lot more wine. and just something more substantial at the end. But yeah, so it was nice to create our own kind of little...
Curate
to do our own little I don't know if it's tapas trail or just a little food trail and trying loads of different things. But didn't you do a tapas trail with Leslie Williams
to prove that
you could like do that kind of, a Spanish one in particular?
It was so much fun. Yeah. We had a blast. It was like Las Tapas de Lola. We couldn't get into Uno Mas. I really, please, Uno Mas, can you please give me a dinner reservation on a weekend in 2023? It's like,
we'll get you in.
I don't really believe that they do anything at night.
You haven't
like
been able to
available.
Get
I wonder if it's just like, yeah, we're open, but they're not.
But they also might be scared of you.
Yeah. No, we went to
Frank's. Don't let her in. Don't let her in.
We went to Porthouse, Pincho. It was so much fun. But what you're describing sounds like my dream night out. Like, I don't like staying in one place. Like, I'm like, ooh, you know, I'd prefer to have something here and there. But Frank's is
Frank's
amazing.
Is incredible.
For having a little wine and having the food there was incredible. I loved it.
I love that those style of wine bars. I mean, Piglet is obviously one that's been around for a long time. But those style of, you know, European, I know we are European, but you know what I mean, like the mainland European wine bars with kind of more small bites kind of has started to
more casual kind of has really come
about in Dublin, because there's just more and more places and it's so nice then to be able to do that. You don't have to, or if someone else joins your party, then you can just add in a bit more. It's a bit more casual and stuff like that. I really like it. That is that fast food as well? Is that a fast food? No. It's not fast food. It's just more.
Well, it's not fast food in
the
fast
like
tapas.
Yeah, it's like, because it's not like fast food in the way that as you were describing tapas like in Spain, in that you're yelling, things come, you have a shot of beer and then you're off to the next place, or wine and then you're off to the next place. So I'm not sure, because I think it will take more time.
The only other place I can think of, there's loads of places I've been that where street food and things like that are amazing. But my brother lives in Berlin, and every time I go there, the fast food over there is incredible as well. I think it's because there's such a mix of cultures in Berlin. In fact, just outside his apartment block on the corner is probably the best falafel I've ever had in my life. There's this old man, he lives in an area, Neukölln, where there's a lot of Muslim community and churches around there, mosques. So there's a huge community, and on the corner there's this man from Turkey, and he knows me now. It's so funny because I've been going over for years and he's always like, he barely speaks English and I try my best in German for him to understand. But we communicate through falafel, through our love of fried chickpea and seasoning. But it's just the best. But he's on the corner and people flock to him at lunchtime, and they do Deliveroo and stuff like that. You know, over there, they're plugged into that. But around that whole general area and around Berlin in general, there's so many amazing fast food places.
Did you get into the currywurst thing?
I have had currywurst, yeah.
Were you obsessed by it? I know some people are obsessed by it.
Not so much. I mean, I like it. I think it's cool. I think I prefer a bratwurst.
Maybe explain what currywurst is.
Currywurst is the, it's a sausage, mm-hmm. Like a hot dog, but it's like curry flavored,
mm-hmm.
And you can get different toppings on it. And then hot dogs are really big in Berlin, mm-hmm. really, really big. There's different types, and there's the Bratwurst, and then there's loads of just different types, but loads of different toppings on them as well. And they're quite big, so it's definitely it's more than a tapa. Definitely, it's quite a big meal. But yeah, I mean, I like it. I didn't love it. Didn't really get massively into it. What I do love in Germany, I suppose, in general, is at Christmas in the markets where you can get the different sausages and also the beautiful little cinnamon dusted kind of donut-y bites. But they do them in little bite size, and you get a cone of them. They're delicious with some glue wine. Mm-mm-mm. Yum. So, have we anything else to say on fast food? I think we've covered a lot. If you guys are listening and you're screaming at your podcast or phone or whatever you're going, how could they not mention this? Please do let us know. Contact us via hello@spicebags.ie, or you can comment on the post that we'll put up for this episode, or just drop us a message, a DM, slide into our DMs on Instagram and let us know what we have not talked about. I'm sure there's loads.
I was actually going to say, Dee, if you want to finish up for international listeners, who hopefully we have a handful,
yes.
Just describe a spice bag.
Oh, okay. So a spice bag, for anybody who doesn't know, was created in Ireland and is a Chinese fast food, Chinese-Irish, let's call it, fast food dish. It is a bag of chips or box of chips, depending on where you get your spice box, spice bag, that has some onion, some peppers, and usually some chili as well, chopped up chili, and some chicken pieces that are, usually the chicken pieces are like almost like goujons, they're kind of strips.
But also the chicken balls are the best.
Chicken balls you can get as well. And basically the whole lot is thrown into a bag or box together and dusted with the spice seasoning. And you get this and you eat it when you're tremendously drunk. Or some people eat it when they're sober, but it's nice when you're out drinking even to stop and get it, because obviously all the lovely seasoning is kind of salty MSG goodness, so you want to drink some more. But yeah, it was created, and I mean, to say that it has become a cult, has a cult following, or there is like a cultish status attached to this dish, is people claiming that they created the original. I believe people say it was created in Cork. It's not a Dublin thing. Originally, there's a lot of, I've noticed another friend of ours, Chris Mellon, who has Dublin Social, also has a podcast on the Headstuff Podcast Network that's banging. He has a series of reels or TikToks which are trying to find the best spice bag or all the spice bags in Dublin. And he's been going around trying them all. It's well worth a look.
It'll make you thirsty.
It'll make you, I'm just thirsty just now, just thinking about it. But yeah, and if you are coming to Ireland, if any international listeners here are on their way over at any point, I would recommend adding it to your bucket list of things to eat in Dublin. We would recommend Charlie's on South Great Georgia Street. It has a really good spice bag. We went in and tried it ourselves, didn't we, guys?
Yeah,
delicious.
Yeah, so yeah, that's what a spice bag is. And that's why, I suppose, Spice Bags was called as such, the podcast, as it is a mix of cultures.
Or a melange.
Yeah, exactly. A melange. So, yeah, that's been probably one of my favorite episodes. Thanks so much, girls, for, having the chats. You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook at Spice Bags Pod. You can find our website, which has a blog on there. You'll find all our episodes on our website, but also a blog with interviews with people that we know and love, but also recipes, other interesting, just things that we find interesting about international food. And the website is spicebags.pod. It's not called that, guys. It's called spicebags.ie. Thank you.
Thanks.
This show is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network, a hub for the creative and the curious. Shows are produced in association with Headstuff and the Podcast Studios Dublin. Find out more or become a member at headstuffpodcasts.com.